unless there's terrible excesses in his process. So you weigh it next. We are taking the report on Egrima SA's annual report. So we are in your able hands, good folks. PID, why do I have Egrima in my CIDB? You are welcome, you are definitely not Egrima. Whoever is leading the delegation, if you could kindly introduce yourself and kindly introduce members of your delegation. The portfolio committee members are fairly new, I don't want to say new. After 6 months, almost close to 6 months, we are all brand new seconds. So that you can put names to faces or faces to names, and the members will quickly do likewise in their comments.
Chairperson of the portfolio committee, members, honorable members of the portfolio committee, and honorable deputy member, good morning. My name is Linda Lamia Kaza, and I'm the chairperson of the Construction Industry Development Board, called CIDB. With me in our delegation, I have our CEO, Mr. Sokuta, who will take us through the presentation, and we also have the CFO, Ms. Shengul Kumai. Thank you. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chair, Mr. Martin, Deputy Minister and Chairman, and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues in the public service, I greet you this morning. Thank you, Chair, for the warm welcome. We were a bit nervous coming to the Portfolio Committee, but after such a welcome, I'm sure we will have something to eat before we leave.
Otherwise, it will be fruitless and wasteful. I'd like to show you the input behind.
Thank you, Chair. I will go through the presentation that we have prepared as the entity under public works, covering on the main the various core programs of the CIDB. As introduced by the chairperson, we also have the chief financial officer who will cover the last part of the presentation in terms of the financial content and the audit content which we need to go through in terms of the presentation. Chair, the presentation for this morning is structured as follows. I will touch very briefly on the legislative mandate of the CIDB, being the Construction Industry Development Board, the priorities, achievements, and challenges for the year under review, which is financial year 2013-14, the annual performance summary of the entity, the employment activity as at 31st of March 2014, which is the end of the financial year, and then thereafter we will cover the financial reports as well as the audit outcomes and corrective action plan for our CFO. Chair, the mandate of the CIDB is to provide strategic leadership to the construction industry stakeholders, to promote sustainable growth of the construction industry and the participation of the emerging sector in the industry, promote improved performance and best practice of public and private sector clients, contractors, and other participants in the construction delivery process, to promote uniform application of policy throughout all schools of government, and promote uniform and equitable standards, construction procurement reform, and improved procurement and delivery management, including our code of conduct. And lastly, to monitor and regulate the performance of the industry and its stakeholders, including the registration of projects and contractors. If you look at our mandate, Chairperson, it's almost all encompassing in the construction industry in terms of all stakeholders and participants in the construction industry are actually covered under our code in terms of their behavior, in terms of their ethics and practice. So the CIDB has got the mandate to regulate the entire landscape of construction within the country. Obviously, I should point out that there is another regulator called the NHBRC, which regulates on top structures of residential dwellings, only top structures. In terms of priorities for the 2013 and 2014 financial years, we have the following priorities: to manage and improve the construction register of services comprising the register of contractors and the register of projects. All contractors that need to do or that require and wants to do business with the government in terms of government procurement need to register with the CIDB in terms of the register of contractors. That is where they also get their grading in terms of assessment of their submission and therefore come out with a grading saying you are CIDB grading level 1 up to level 9, which is the highest grading which we have. Also, we have what we call a system that we call iTender, which is the register of projects. All government projects need to be registered in the register of projects so that the contractor that visits our website finds all of the projects that are going out on tender within the public space listed on the register of projects. Also, within the private sector, all contracts above 10 million need to be registered and uploaded on the register of projects. The second priority was on regulation, to review and align the construction industry development regulation as amended in 2004. Contractor development was also a priority on the term under review, monitoring industry performance in terms of various areas of competence within the industry, like your health and safety and so on, were monitored and reported on how we're doing in terms of that. Industry skill development delivery, how is the industry faring in terms of skill development within the sector, development of best practice standards, the various standards at which are set, at which the contractors need to perform at, were priority. Infrastructure delivery improvement was also a priority for the year under review. Compliance and regulation enforcement. We also sought to enforce compliance to the CIDB regulation and process for the year under review. In terms of annual performance salary achievements, we have achieved in the following areas: the construction industry development amendment regulation as gazetted on the 2nd July 2013. When we looked at the regulations and did amendments, we looked at the annual turnover of contractors that needed to submit to CIDB for grading, and we reduced the annual turnover for various grading within the assessment for grading. Also, we had requirements that wanted contractors to have registered professionals within their staff establishment in order to be graded at a certain level, and that was also removed, and the prerogative was left to the contractors to ensure that they have professionals. Letter B was removed, which is an alternative to which was an alternative to a track record that the contractor needed to submit, which was looking only at the financials. For instance, if the contractor was financially sound and did not submit all the documents that show how have they arrived in terms of the track record within construction, we would give the rating based on the financials. But now we removed that and said the track record needs to be reflected on how long the contractor has been trading in the construction industry and what work have they done with all the supporting documentation. Also, the track record also was balanced with the financial and reduced to be on par with the financial, so that the track record is not superior to the financial or the financial to the track record. Also, joint venture calculations were improved. Some of the contractors went into joint ventures, small contractors that is, went into joint ventures with smaller contractors, with bigger contractors. And the calculation of points for those contractors was also improved substantially. The clarification of classes of work between general building and fencing were also categorized accordingly, to say some of the contractors choose their specialty in fencing and the various specialties within fencing, and that was then recognized as such. And the tender value limits were revised with provision for mandatory and periodic review. In terms of the construction register services, the production of the register was stabilized as we moved to a new system of registering contractors, and 90% achievement for processing contractor applications within 21 working days target was attained, whereas the target of 91 missed due to backlog of applications brought into the first quarter of the year. All targets were met after the first quarter. 100% of queries were administered within the stipulated turnaround time of 48 hours against the target of 95% on the construction register services. And 96% of data capture errors for processing grade 2 to 9 applications were rectified within a period of 10 working days against the target of 95%. I think here we're comparing really what we achieved against what was set as target in terms of our register service and registration of contractors. Secondly, in terms of the registration of contractors, if we look at the presentation there on the screen, you will see that on the left-hand side we've got general building, register of contractors, and on the right-hand side we've got civil engineering contractors. At the bottom of each of the tables there, we've got 2012, 2013, and 2014. If you look on the far left top, contractors registered under grade 2 to 4, and 5 to 6 are listed in blue and green respectively. There was a slight growth there in terms of contractors coming to CIDB to register on the general building, but we see a slighter improved registration drive by contractors coming to CIDB on the civil engineering front, particularly grades 2 to 4, which is the blue line, and a very steady improvement on grade 5 to 6, which is under civil engineering on the right-hand side. If we look at the bottom two tables with purple color there, there is significant growth in registration of contractors, which is the higher grade 7 to 9, both on the building, on the general building, as well as on the civil engineering, with the civil engineering showing a greater growth in terms of contractors coming to register within the CIDB. Under the stage of transformation, if we look at black-owned contractors that have come to register within the CIDB, under general building on the left-hand side and civil engineering on the right-hand side, we see more or less a steady and a very slow rate of growth for black-owned contractors, particularly at the grade 2 to 4 and 5 to 6 on both civil and building construction. On the general building, on higher grade 7 to 8, we see a very slow rate of registration of black construction, which is on the left-hand side bottom. And on the right-hand side bottom, on the civil engineering, there is slight increase towards 6% towards the end of the year 2014, March, end of the financial year, in grade 7 to 9, which is the purple color that you see at the bottom there. I must say, Chair, that this registration by contractors is really cause for concern within the CIDB, because it's not showing drastic registration by particularly higher graded contractors which are owned by blacks coming to register within the CIDB. In terms of the increase in proportion of black owned companies in general building and civil engineering, I have specifics in terms of grade which are on the screen there, as well as on your presentation, where on grade 9 we had a growth in ownership of black contractors from 2013 to 2014 of 19% to 23%. Grade 7 and 8 we had 58% growing to 63%. And grade 5 to 6 we had 78% growing to 83%. And the lowest grade, which is 2 to 4, we had 93% to 94%, which was a very steady increase on a very low level. Under general building, we have grade 9 in terms of black ownership increasing from 18% to 23%, grade 7 and 8 from 68% to 90%, and grade 5 and 6 from 84% to 86%, and grade 2 to 4 under general building moving, staying at 94% if you look at the lowest part of the presentation. Chair, again, we reflect on woman ownership in terms of the construction landscape, which reflects that on general building at grade 9 we've got 11% on general building, as well as 5% on civil engineering of ownership by women folk in the construction sector. If we look at grade 7 and 8, on general building, we look at 27%, and on civil engineering, 22%. If we look at grade 5 and 6, 44% on general building and 36% on civil engineering. Grade 2 to 4, general building, 49%, and 49% on civil engineering. I move away now from the construction register services, which register contractors and regulate the registration of contractors within CIDB, and go to some of the practice notes that were developed for the financial year under review. There was practice note 30, which came out in May of 2013, which gives a guide on the blacklisting of contractors for non-performance, which leads to actions that organs of state can take against contractors for non-performance. That practice note is available on our website of the CIDB and can be made also available manually. We also had practice note 31, which spoke about requirements for registered professionals on construction work contracts, which was out in February of 2014, which is guidelines to clients, clients being the public sector entities as well as government departments that roll out infrastructure to specify eligibility requirements for registered professionals to undertake the management of construction work contracts. Also, Chair, under the best practice standard for contractor performance reports, we had the CIDB standard contractor performance report for use of construction work contracts for grades 2 to 9 out, which provides a uniform and consistent method of assessment of performance of a contractor. This performance relates to time, cost, and quality management, health and safety management, management of site conditions, and management of subcontractors, including how the big contractors pay the subcontractors. So this best practice standard is out there, and it was published in Government Gazette in August 2013. We also had a best practice standard on construction management systems, which had requirements for customized standards based on recognizable construction industry minimum standards, covering also health and safety, quality management, environmental management, as well as this standard allows for expansion and conversion to meet the ISO requirements, which is the standardization requirement of the SADF. We also had the best practice standard for developing construction skills. This standard provides for a contract participation goal for workplace training on public sector contracts in tenders grade 7 to 9. In other words, for work that is undertaken by grade 7 to 9, which are the higher grades within the CIDB registration, there is a requirement for skills development to take place on construction sites, so that there is a pool of skills and a pipeline of skills development within the construction site and happening at the construction call phase. We also had monitoring of industry performance on the following areas. The construction industry indicators of performance focusing on clients, which is the public sector entities and departments, and the client agents, consultants, and contractors. How are they performing? In other words, the clients, the consultants, and the contractors. Those quarterly reports were monitoring. Those performance were actually published. And there was also overview of supply and demand and structure of industry in terms of state of contractor development and transformation. So those reports are available within the CIDB, which show what are the trends of supply and demand, as well as contractor development and transformation of the construction industry. There was also a close monitoring of SMME business conditions survey, which indicates business conditions, competition, employment, and access to credit in grades 2 to 8 construction. question. We know that the last part, which is access to credit, is really one of the stumbling blocks for contractors to be able to commence work when they have actually been able to secure work. Access to credit is a major issue. In terms of construction quality, i.e. the outcome or output of construction work done, the survey which was conducted among clients were neutral or dissatisfied with performance of contractors on 12% of the project surveyed in 2013, and around 80% of project surveyed that had levels of defect which are regarded as inappropriate. So overall, we only have 12% complaints in terms of performance, and 8% of project surveys showed major defects which are found inappropriate. The graph at the bottom there shows client satisfaction with construction quality, particularly dissatisfied, neither satisfied or dissatisfied, and a large chunk which is green of satisfied clients with the work which has been done in construction sites. In terms of monitoring compliance to iTender that I spoke about earlier, that is the register of projects where all clients need to upload their projects when they go out to tender to the CIDB website so that the contractors can be able to access them. We had the following indicators of compliance. The state-owned companies as well as national departments showed 72% of compliance to uploading their projects onto the CIDB website. At provincial departments that drive infrastructure, we had 63% compliance. Metropolitan councils or municipalities showed 6% of compliance, and high capacity municipalities showed 70% of compliance. That would also constitute district municipalities, which are volume of work. Compliance to the code of conduct, which the CIDB has, where all role players within the construction industry have to comply with the code of conduct in terms of good governance, ethics, and how they conduct themselves within the construction industry. We are mandated to investigate all cases of transgression to our code of conduct for all parties engaged in construction procurement. So it can be government officials, it can be contractors themselves, it can be consultants, and so on. We are mandated to investigate all of these cases at the CIDB. Such cases include, among others, fraudulent activity during registration on the register of contractors, procurement fraud, collusive behavior, deviations to the requirements of the CIDB regulations, and supporting prescriptions. Formal inquiries on these were conducted on 19 cases for the financial year under review. Of these, 3 cases were withdrawn, and the respondents on the remaining 16 cases were found to have been guilty. So we had 19 cases that were conducted for inquiries, and of these, 3 cases were withdrawn, and 16 were found to have been guilty. The CIDB's investigation into collusive practices by the 15 firms found guilty by the Competition Commission has commenced on the financial year under review. The outcome of the investigation came out on the new financial year and therefore cannot be reported on the previous financial year or the year under review. in terms of improving compliance to CIDD prescripts, CIDD has conducted capacitation sessions to public sector clients on the following areas: the legislative requirements for construction procurement to public sector clients, supply chain management powers and functions, procurement documents for construction and engineering projects, solicitation of tender offers, evaluation of tender offers, implementation and management of infrastructure projects. So these are areas that we went out as the CIDD to various clients and created capacity or provided training on these areas. Also strengthening delivery capacity within the public sector. The Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program was primarily aimed at improving infrastructure delivery in the education, health, and public health sector at national and provincial level. I must say that this delivery mechanism has had a positive impact on public sector delivery, as reported at the quarterly technical committee meeting hosted by the CIDD. Technical support and training on the IDMF has continued in this financial year in the rollout of IDMF across government departments. IDMF stands for Infrastructure Delivery Management System. Knowledge sharing in construction procurement has also taken place where CIDD finds platforms at which we share knowledge, particularly with the private sector, as well as the public sector, by way of meeting with clients and construction procurement officers forum, which we established in the previous financial year and continued to be rolled out in the new financial year with great success. Here is a platform where construction procurement officers, people who drive procurement of infrastructure in municipalities and provincial departments, where they have a forum that is established and they share ideas about procurement issues and tightening up the screws in terms of tender procedures and tender processes. The purpose then of the Construction Procurement Officer Forum was to facilitate and improve knowledge sharing on procurement best practices, contractor development, legislative framework, and compliance to CIDD prescriptions. This forum also caters for representation by the heads of projects and supply chain management in the public sector. These individuals have provided robust and meaningful debates on construction matters. Chair, we also had improvements in legislative provision in that draft standards for construction procurement competence have been drafted as part of the strategy to build construction procurement skills within the public sector. The standards themselves aim to address the skills deficiency among procurement practitioners and to set a threshold for assessment of training outcomes. The standards will be finalized in the current financial year, which is year 2014-15. There has also been consultation on draft regulations of prompt payment and dispute resolutions, which were completed. The regulations will be finalized in the current financial year. And these two regulations seek to provide greater certainty on payment of service providers. We know that this is a major challenge, that people do some work and then thereafter there are delays in payment by client departments who do not necessarily honor a 30-day payment period after the submission of the invoice. So we would like this regulation to go out and be finalized within this current financial year, so that there is greater help, particularly for smaller contractors that have cash flow problems. This also, this regulation also seek to optimize on payment periods to minimize interest charges for the client. In some instances, there are additional interest that are being charged for delayed invoices that have not been honored. Also to deter deliberate late payments by clients as unjustifiable and ethically unacceptable. In terms of the program on provincial offices that we have within the CIDB on all 9 provinces, as well as contractor development, we have reviewed policy on national contractor development program and also rolled out client capacitation. I can just single out that SALGA as well as COFTA have been very active on our municipal outreach program in terms of rolling out and making sure that there is greater awareness in municipalities about the need for contractor development on all of our projects, which are targeting also the element of contractor development. Also, there have been provincial contractor training in all provinces where we encourage the participation of the emerging sector. This simply means that the officials that are packaging projects must not only look at the outcome of the project as being to have a school or to have a building or to have a road completed, but also they must factor in contractor development as an outcome within the project itself. The monitoring, therefore, of this program and evaluation framework was approved by the board of the CIDB as well as the MINLEC for this program to be rolled out within the framework that is approved. And there is ongoing contractor development strategy implementation around this subject. In terms of enterprise development, that is the development of small contractors, provincially there have been stakeholder engagement through the provincial stakeholder liaison meetings, as well as provincial contractor development forum, which we conduct in various provinces. There's also contractor business management training, which happened twice, over 400 contractors that were affected, and also catalytic projects which aim at enterprise development, which were identified, which benefited 1,500 contractors in 20 contractor development programs. In terms of quality of services that we, provide to CIDB in our offices, there is quarterly contractor satisfaction report which is generated, which indicated that about 90% of contractors that came through our doors for a service, that is registration, inquiries and so on, were satisfied with overall service that was provided at our offices. Also, in our offices, we provide contractor tips and advice brochures on various subjects of construction. This simply means that we've got material that we always generate where contractors that come through our doors can just get brochures and tips and information on how to better position themselves as contractors. Also, grade 1 registration within 48 hours was compromised, and the 96% target that we had was this. The various provinces of KZN, Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and Northern Cape experienced operational challenges, including staffing and increased contractor influx that contributed to us not attaining the 96%, but attaining 72% deliverable. These have since been addressed, and we're aiming at 85% compliance for the year 2014-15. Okay. In terms of challenges, Chairperson, I would like to highlight the following challenges. Targets were not achieved at the following areas. 90% of contractor applications processed within 21 days were done against a target of 91% due to a backlog of applications that were carried into the first quarter of the financial year under review as a result of the implementation of the new registration software system, which simply means that on the financial year 2012-13, there was introduction of the new registration system, and there was a backlog that came from that financial year which came into the first quarter of the new financial year, which is the year under review, which made us not to comply with the target that was set of 91% of contractor applications being processed within 21 working days. There was also a draft model for the competence standard that was developed but not approved by the board at the end of the financial year. So there was no approval of the draft model for competence standard on the year under review. Also, anti-corruption model to promote transparency and combat fraud in the construction industry was developed but was not approved by the board at the end of the financial year. If I continue with the challenges, there were lengthy consultative processes with stakeholders which resulted in draft standards for gateway reviews to be delayed to ensure that it is aligned to the standards for delivery management system, which needs to be published by the National Treasury. Also, we had a challenge with the revision and review of CID prescripts, which were delayed for finalization. In terms of the employment equity within our staff establishment, Chair, we have the matrix which we have on the screen there, which shows how we fare as an organization in terms of employment equity with the occupational level from top management up to down at the temporary employees. We've got the category of male, African, colored, Indian, and white, and then the category of female, African, colored, Indian, and white, as well as foreign national, and we have totals on the far right on how we say as the institution in terms of employment equity. The numbers speak for themselves, Chair, so I will run straight to the next slide and just highlight a few areas which I would like to bring to your attention. The summary is such that in terms of males, we've got 41% representativity, and in terms of females, we've got 59%. We do not have people with disability, which is a major challenge that needs our attention within the institution. And in terms of the employment equity statistics. The employment equity level at our institution show a huge concentration of African females in the lower ranks than in the higher ranks of our organization. Furthermore, the higher ranks show not only a lower concentration of female employees, but also lower levels of African candidates in general in the higher levels of organization. There is an urgent need to address the employment of female employees in higher ranks at our institution. There is also the big challenge that there are no disabled employees at the CIDB, and this situation is really receiving our attention. I will then, Chairperson, would please request our CFO to just go through the financial report and the audit aspects of the report, which are the last slides of our presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, honorable Deputy Minister, and fellow colleagues. I will take you through the financial performance of the CIDB as at the end of March 2014, which is the financial period 2013-2014. Basically, what we are showing is just a summary in terms of the actual figures at the end of the financial year versus the budget at the beginning of that financial year. The last column basically shows us the figures that we closed with as at the end of March 2013. Why we are showing that particular column is because we had to restate some figures, and I will explain why. So in essence, what we are showing is just the revenue as well as the expenditure in summary format. What we are then showing is that in total, the revenue, the budget in terms of our revenue for the year was 122 million, and that 122 million was broken down mainly into three categories: 72 million, which is the government grant, 47 million, which was what we projected we were going to collect in terms of registrations by contractors, and about 3 million on interest in terms of our investments. At the end of the financial year, we actually over-collected in terms of our revenue by just about 14 million. The big chunk of that over-collection actually comes from the contractor registration revenue. We had budgeted that we were going to collect revenue in terms of a registration of 47 million, but we actually collected just under 60 million, which was an over-collection of about 12 million. Also, in terms of our interest, we over-collected 1.2 million against what we had budgeted. And also, what you see is other income of 1.2 million, which we had not necessarily budgeted for. The reason why we do not have a budget next to that 1.2 million other income is because in terms of the transaction, how we treat it, it is an in and out in our book, in the sense that we collected that other income from the Department of Public Works in terms of the one executive member that was seconded to DPW, and then we would recover her salary from DPW. It isn't in and out in our books because in the expenditure we also expense the same amount. So if you look at both the revenue and the expenditure, it will then be an in and out. So both in the revenue as well as in the expenditure, we did not budget for it. So in essence, what we are showing and what the CEO presented earlier is the issues around the fact that we had backlog in terms of our registration as a result of us changing or upgrading our registration software system. And when that backlog was cleared around mid-year through the year last year, we then also saw a huge increase in terms of our registration as a result of the backlog in registrations that were coming from the period 2012 and they were actually finalized in 2013. That then largely resulted in the over-collection of revenue as we were clearing that backlog. So we then closed with that over-collection in terms of our revenue of 14 million. If you look at our expenditure, we are more or less on par in terms of what we had budgeted. We had budgeted a total expenditure of 122 million, which is exactly the budgeted revenue that we were going to collect. As we all know, in terms of the PFMA, we're not allowed to budget for either a deficit or a surplus. So we had budgeted that we were going to expend the entire revenue that we were going to collect of 122 million. And in terms of the actual figures that we spent exactly 122 million. Which is then shown by that minimal variance in terms of our expenditure at the end of the financial year. So we then close with that surplus of about 14.6 million, which is largely as a result of the over-collection of revenue. We then had to process the losses on disposal, where we actually clear, which is a transaction that we do once a year, where we look at our fixed asset register and we look at which assets are either broken that cannot be fixed or that are obsolete, and then we write those off our register. So in terms of those particular assets, we had a couple of assets that we had to write off, and we then record that as losses on disposal, in the sense that we are taking those assets out of our fixed asset register, and that was about 1.6 million, which then made us end up with a net surplus of about 12.97 million at the end of the financial year. What we see as the last column in terms of the actual figures that have been restated is at the end of the financial year, a deficit of just 3 million. That was as a result of advice from the Auditor General, where in the previous year they had advised us to actually raise the provision in terms of staff, the provision for staff bonuses in that particular year. And in the current year that they were auditing, 2013-14, they asked that we did the same thing that they had advised in 2013-14, and they asked us to reverse that. So we then had to go back to the previous year to also restate the figures so that they correspond with the treatment in 2013-14, hence the restatement of figures at the end of the financial year 2012-13, and that's the last column. And then I will deal with the audit outcomes as well as the corrective action plan, which we otherwise refer to as the CAP, the corrective action plan, in terms of the audit findings by the Auditor General. In summary, for the period 2013-14, we got an unqualified audit report from the Auditor General, and what the only matter that is an emphasis of matter is what I was explaining in terms of the restatement of figures. There was the restatement of the corresponding figures, which is the provision for performance bonus as per the advice by the Auditor General. So the mere fact that we had to restate the previous year's figures to correspond with the treatment in 2013-14 then had to be reported as an emphasis of matter, so that the reader understands why we had to restate the figures for the previous year. So that was, in essence, the actual only matter that was raised as an emphasis of matter, just to bring to the reader's attention the reason why we had to restate the figures of the previous financial year. Then the other issues that were then reported on in terms of the Auditor General's report was the fact that we had to adjust, during the audit we had to adjust some material misstatements in our annual performance. The performance figures in terms of the targets that we had reported on and what the AG then audited. We had to make some material adjustments there, which we did make during the audit, and we corrected, and the AG then reported that in terms of their report that there were adjustments which were subsequently corrected. There was also issues that the Auditor General highlighted in the report insofar as compliance with the legislation and that referred to expenditure management. And that was specifically around the issue of prevention of irregular expenditure and specifically dealing with consequence management. And this specifically related to irregular expenditure for prior years that we had, because the irregular expenditure that we reported this year was coming from previous years in terms of contracts that were still open from previous years that we were still paying from. So the fact that, and I will highlight that also when I go through the CAP. The other report that the Auditor General reported on in terms of their report is the issue around the investigation on the into the registration of contractors, which was still in progress at the end of the financial year. The next slide then looks at the CAP. And the basically, the only item, if you look at our internal audit opinion and the report by the Auditor General, the only item that then goes into our CAP, our corrective action plan, is basically the consequent management insofar as the irregular expenditure items from previous years are concerned. And what we that particular finding is receiving our attention as we speak. We have had meetings with National Treasury in terms of us showing them the reports and the facts and the internal controls that we've put in place since 2012-13 when these particular findings were raised, and we have given them those reports. We have engaged with them and they have given us specific actions that we need to go back and put together and put in place, and then the policies that we put in place, the review in the structure in our SDM, and basically the centralization of the whole function, which was not necessarily in existence in 2012 and prior years when these specific issues were raised. So we are going to be again meeting with Treasury to look at the specific actions that they've asked us to look at, and stemming from there, they will then reassess whether they condone those transactions on the basis of what the controls that were put in place, and whether they are then particularly satisfied in terms of the interventions that were put in place, and then we'll take it from there. So that's essentially what we have in terms of our CAP, stemming from the actual audit report. And then we also have items, as you know, that in terms of the audit report that finds its way to our annual report, it's not necessarily all the housekeeping matters that get raised during the audit that the Auditor General actually picks up. So what we've done is we've taken the Auditor General management letter, as those issues are actually management actions that have to be put in place in terms of the findings that the Auditor General would have picked up during the audit. And what we've done, we've taken all those items and we have also incorporated them into the CAP. And what it actually looks at, we use the CAP as our own monitoring tool to actually track progress in terms of us putting in place the necessary interventions and internal controls to address the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. And it looks at timelines at which issues will be resolved and who the responsible officials are, as well as it determines the specific actions that must be taken to actually resolve the issues that were raised. We do this so that we make sure that what the Auditor General has raised, we don't find a repeat of the same issues being raised in future audits. So if one compares the findings that were raised in the previous year, because we introduced this CAP document in the previous year, one looks at the issues that were raised in the previous year that were included in our previous year's CAP. We had about 17 findings. And at the end of the financial year, all those findings were cleared with the exception of only two items that were partially cleared. And those two items is what has been reported, the issues around performance information, and the accurateness of our targets and all those things in terms of our performance information. as well as the partial implementation of the IT governance framework, and what was not completed is actually the IT plan, which is due at the end of March 2015 in terms of the IT governance framework from DPSA. So those were the only two items that were partially completed, hence not fully completed in terms of the caps and the findings that were raised in the previous year. Over and above that, what we have is the Auditor General has also introduced what they call a dashboard that actually looks at the summary of the findings that they raised in terms of our management letter. And this dashboard was actually developed and introduced just to look at the key controls that have to be put in place and the CIDB or any other entity for that matter or department has to take care of to make sure that as we move forward, we go towards an Operation Clean audit and make sure that the repeat findings and issues that we need to take care of as we move forward are addressed. So we have that dashboard, and that dashboard, I actually look at the progress and the status of that to make sure, because it is linked directly with the CAP document. And I have regular meetings with the Auditor General to look at the specific dashboard and where they assess progress. And I report on both the CAP as well as the dashboard at our quarterly internal audit meetings and risk meetings. And the Auditor General actually attends those meetings and reports on the progress made in terms of the dashboard as well. We have also included that that our internal audit team also assist in following up on the progress on matters in terms of of the progress in addressing matters that are included in the CAP as they come directly from both the management letter as well as the audit report. So that's basically all the matters that were raised in so far as our audit is concerned in the annual report at the end of the year. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for a very exhaustive overview. Members, your opportunity for comments, questions, must tell them how.
Thank you, sir. So I just want to go with slide, I think it's slide 8. Slide 9, sorry. I just want to find out that I think there is a difference between registration and grading. On this slide 9, where on 7, minimum grade 7 to 8, where you say there is a high number of intake, I just want to make sure how many are registration and how many are graded to higher positions, so that we make a difference whether they were within and then they have been upgraded to that level. And then on slide number 13, I see you are talking about blacklisting of contractors for non-performance. Chairperson, they normally say charity begins at home. And I'm not sure whether did you look at the annual report of the Public Works. 13. The Department of Public Works is also giving jobs to the contractors that are not registered with them. Now the question is, what is the value of registering with you? If I can still get jobs from the government. And if you say you are blacklisting me, well, what does it mean? Because I can still get jobs, despite you blacklisting me. So I just want to get clarity there. How do you do it? So I think I just want to go to the annual report. I think that's page 56. There is an investigation that when the AG was doing it, it was not complete. Maybe if you can give us a feedback on that investigation. And the other one is financial and performance management. I don't know this one, what went wrong. Management did not adequately review financial statements. I mean, whether it's ignorance or what was it, I mean, it doesn't give sense. When the Auditor General can come and complain on that, it doesn't. And the other one, Chairperson, there is a cell phone airtime paid to an individual with a stolen cell phone. I just want to get, it's 151,000. Was it for a year? Was it 2 days? How long was it to pay a cell phone that is stolen? I mean, airtime. I don't understand, how do you pay an airtime on something that is stolen? It really doesn't give sense. Chairperson, thank you.
Honourable Member, thank you. The next was Honourable Tony.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. First of all, we must actually thank the President, because most of the time they are fair on this presentation. But what I want to find out, do they have a system? They have a system. Do you have a system that will help to capacitate the smaller municipalities and rural areas? And the other one, just need to check on slide number 10. Even then, they are talking about the slow and the rate of like owner contractors from 87 to 39. Do they have the system? Do they have a system that will talk to this? Because we cannot just say, that you are complaining, but you don't have a system that you have to, what are you going to do about this? And the other question is this one on slide number 11. The specific, I'm worried about the specific, because they must think of physical. Because if they say 18% to 23%, I'm not contacting them, I'm not contacting them, because you see, in grade 9, actually, why is that? So, if you can... No. And the other one...
If anybody is to receive any look...
No, it's my friend, don't know. And the other one, just again, is this one of...
On the ground,
normally we realize that in most cases, the work that is being done by contractors, it becomes poorer and poorer. So I was just wanted to check as to whether, how do we do this? Do we also monitor and check against what has been happening in the past? There's a lot of outcry as far as the work that is being done by the contractors. And we are unable to see as to whether indeed you do the monitoring, you do the development of these people. There is also a grade one, which you said to start from grade one up to grade nine. But you are very much silent about grade one. You always talk about grade two to grade nine. But at the beginning you said to start from grade one to grade nine. What's happening with grade one? What are you doing about those contractors who are at grade one? I take it they also register with a particular fee. Then what do we do about them? It seems they don't feature anywhere. So maybe we can get an explanation on that. There is this issue of joint ventures. These contractors who get into joint ventures, do you have a sort of a contract that will assist them so that the work that they are doing is not in a way that you find that the smaller ones, they suffer in that particular joint venture? In most cases, those who go to joint venture, especially the smaller ones, they end up coming out of that, you know, contract with absolutely nothing, or even come out at a very, you know, worse state from what they did. Because the aim is that when you joint venture with someone else, that will be somebody who is at a higher level, and that person will improve your lower standard. But it doesn't happen that way in most cases. You also talked about those 16 cases that were found. I just want to know what was the outcome, the basic process, and what is happening to the contractors. Yes. Thank you very much. I did realize that I was worried about the visibility not appearing anywhere. But you are saying you have a way to address it. You are also worried about it. We hope the next time when you present, we'll have something better. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. We presented with regard to the issue of people who are having disabilities or different disabilities, whatever the book word might be. You said that you are urgently doing something about this, but you did not clarify what exactly are you doing in order to address this. I'll be interested to know exactly what the plan is here. The next member, as noted in members, Honorable Mugu.
Thank you very much, Chair. CEO indicated that on slide 21, there were those cases that were found in terms of compliance to the code of conduct, procurement fraud, collusive behavior, and so on and so forth. And of the 19 cases, 3 were withdrawn, but 16 were found guilty. I would like to know what happened to those that were found guilty, what sanction was meted out to those. Secondly, on a number of occasions, or a number of instances, a number of employees resigned when they were faced with either investigations or disciplinary action. Was there any follow-up in these people while they resigned, but how were they punished? Was that resignation their own punishment by just leaving the organization, or was there a follow-up in terms of making sure that the people may be paid back, or whatever form of sanction? On slide 14, you were talking about the best practice standards where contractors' performance reports are conducted. I just wanted to know, how do you monitor the standards? how do you ensure that these standards are complied with by the contractors? On slide 16, you talk about the best practice standards, developing construction skills. I'm just curious to find out, how do you assess this at construction site? So this is what you said, CEO. How do you make sure that there's compliance in terms of developing of construction skills? And my last question, slide 21, again, the investigation that has been carried out by the Competition Commission, and as regards your own investigation, how do they tally, how do they work together? Because there are two organizations dealing with the same issue, and we know that the Competition Commission has slapped, I think, a fine on a number of construction companies. So how does your investigation differ from the Competition Commission? And in terms of sanctions, is there also a difference you are going to impose on these companies as compared to what was imposed by the Competition Commission? Chairperson, thank you very much. That's it for now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Adam.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the CICB for your presentation. My first question, Chairperson, is on slide 40, and that has to do with the cap of which the CEO is monitoring the cap. Now, it says here in the notes that the CFO will report to the audit committee. I want to know how often it is done. That's my first question. And the other one, Chairperson, has been covered by this one on the people with disabilities. Is there vacancies that will be specifically to reinstate for people with disabilities? In Chairperson, it's for training. They say there must be training on the site. But what is the accreditation for this worker that will be trained on site? Because a project begins and ends, and what after that? Then on the highlight slide 30, a draft model for the competence standard was developed but not approved by the board at the end of the financial year. What is bad language? The second one too. Anti-corruption model. It was not approved by the board. This government is known for the fact that it's done everything to curb corruption. Why isn't there a model for this? Not 20 years after this government. Then Chairperson, they say they have on slide 27, they've trained over 400 contractors. What is the impact on that contractor? Will these people receive on their own afterwards projects to do? And the very last one, Chairperson, is they mentioned on slide 18 that access to credit for contractors in grade 2 to 8 is a challenge. What is CIBC doing to overcome that challenge? Are they influencing bank financial institutes to help these people, or what are they doing? Thank you, James.
Because with this school, then when the time of protest, the people can destroy
what is important, because they toy for clinics, but they destroy all, you know. Yes, thank you.
Honourable member, thank you. Let's have a break at this stage for not a break, a time for a rejoinder from the entity to respond to the comments and questions posed, and thereafter we'll perhaps have an opportunity to have a last occasion for taking some questions. We still have another presentation, and I'm worried why the your schedule 2 entities on one day, when you know that you normally take the whole day up to lunch with one entity. But that's another matter. A corner will have to tell you where we got that wind or lack of wind from. You are rejoined. You may respond to the questions and comments, please.
Just 1 minute to just consult my chair.
Okay. The minute has been asked for caucus, and we will take the difficult one.
In this
spaghetti of regulatory entities, that we are getting an effective, that we are effectively regulating the construction sector, and not falling between gaps and holes. The CIDB has certainly pointed out to us that with the National Home Builders entity, they're beginning to talk to them, I think, more effectively. But there's unevenness in that. So some, I think, well, one of the colleagues might have been referring to shoddy work in RDP housing, for instance. And that's because the National Home Builders only look at the top structure and not the infrastructure in the city. And then final point I want to make, but I'll respond to more. A lot of the questions were about what is your monitoring capacity to go out. And that's not really their job. Okay, their job is to set standards and best practices and to monitor the performance. The performance on site needs to be monitored essentially by the contracting authority. So if it's a public entity, if it's the Department of Public Works, or the Independent Development Trust, the IDT, that is responsible for program managing and project managing, it's they that need to make sure in an ongoing way that the contract that they've entered into is being sufficiently observed. So the training, for instance, requirement for grade 7, 8, and 9, which is a contractual agreement as best practice. So the state needs to work together. We're not always very good at that. We work in silos. And the CIDD is a very important, in my view, entity that can help us to get better coordination across the city. But they can't do everything, and it would be unfair and unrealistic to expect that you're going to be inspecting funds, construction funds. There are other things, but as I said, I want to use the different channel that I have of communication. But I think the question, sorry, if I can just also flag, I would be interested also in the answer that they provide to what is the value of being grade one? And when you set a target of a registration in 48 hours and you say you haven't quite met the target, if you get registered in 48 hours, what kind of process is gone through to grade you? You make the money out of it. Not very much, I don't think, a registration of grade one. But what is that telling anyone?
to process because there is an assessment that needs to take place, as opposed to those that are coming in to register just to be on the CIDP database. Currently, we're not turning anyone away. Anybody who comes to our doors with a registration fee and an ID can get a grade one registration, which is the registration level one of the CIDP, without necessarily going through assessment. But those who bring paperwork and documentation to substantiate that they have been active in the industry, they have bank statements speak for themselves, they've got a trade record from various clients they work with, then those are sent to the assessment committee for grading, which is the completion of the registration. To say now you are registered, but also you've been given a grade, which is higher than grade one, because of the paperwork and documentation that you provide to the CIB. So that is the difference.
So that's the follow-up question. Yeah, I think my question was not understood. We have seen that graph on slide number 9. I'm looking at the good sharp curve, that is good. What I'm saying, are those people being upgraded inside the CIDP, or are those new registrants, they come and you assess them, as you are saying, and then you put them at grade 8? I just want to see if you yourself, are you upgrading people to such a high level, or are just people coming from outside and register new and get their high grading? That's what I want to know.
Thank you, Chair. The question is much clearer. From grade 2 to grade 9, registration means that you have come to our doors, you've brought the documentation, and we have registered and graded you. From grade 2 to grade 9, the registration means submission of the documentation and also the grading, assessment and grading of the contractor.
Just to add something, the first slide that has the amendment to the regulation, and we should look at that slide. To look at that slide, we also used to have method B registration, which meant that as long as the contractor had money and the capacity that was required then for that registration, the contractor could just approach the IDB and say, I want to register and register and afford all the information and all this. So although that grading system method B has been phased out, we still have contractors in our system who, some of them, have started at higher grades even if they did not have the construction capabilities or competence, but they did have the funding to be at those grades. But then because of the risk associated with that and the feedback that we're getting from clients that they would award tenders to contractors at higher grade levels only to find that they can't perform the work, then we phase out that system.
Thank you, Chair. If I may proceed, the second question was on sidestepping, which spoke about contractors that are given jobs but are not registered with the CIDP. Second one was about blacklisting of contractors. Yes, the practice note is there, as the Deputy Minister has alluded, that we issue out practice notes which guide client departments that roll out infrastructure on how to handle contractors that are not performing. And as such, if contractors continue to get jobs in perpetuity without being punished or blacklisted, then the system is getting defeated in that we will have contractors that continue to obtain work and to be able to be incompetent, not completing work, falling short in terms of quality, also running out of money because the work has not been structured well, in terms of financial draws, monthly certificates. So this question says note 6 to assist departments to say once the transgression or violation happens consistently in this particular fashion, you then have the prerogative to blacklist the contractor concerned. So the practice note itself speaks substantially about what are the steps that need to be taken in order to arrive at that blacklisting stage. It's not an umbrella or a once-off kind of event to say the contractor fails there and now they are blacklisted. We look at the steps that need to be taken to arrive at that level. And the practice note is available both from our website as well as in some of our booklets at our website.
Yeah, no, it's not a conversation. Just I'm not getting my answers the way I asked her the question. My question was that you blacklist me because I'm registered with the CIDB. But there are companies that are not registered with the CIDB. They still get jobs even with the Department of Public Works that you are registered with. Now, what is the purpose for me? What is in for me to register with you if I can still get jobs? What will happen if you blacklist me? Because I'll go out and still get a job from the department. So that's my question.
Okay. I'll try to answer, which I have on the screen here. This issue is covered, honorable member, in that we do not have 100% compliance by clients on the registration of the contractors on our iTender. Number two, we do have pockets where clients actually appoint contractors which are not registered with CIDB or which do not qualify to do certain levels of work because they do not have the CIDB grading to actually undertake the kind of work. This is a compliance issue that we're working with, and it's part of what I reported earlier to say there are 19 cases that were brought to our attention where we needed to take action against certain clients which use, among other transgressions, CIDB registered contractors that are not at the correct grading or are not graded at all. In this respect, we do take action once those have been brought to our attention. Unfortunately, we are not proactive at the moment because of capacity, but it's something that the board is actually looking at to create capacity within CIDB. So that we not only reacted, but in all cases, honorable member, that have been brought to our attention, where a non-CIDB registered contractor have done work, we have taken action against it. We first of all investigate the issue, and we take action in terms of our system.
Also, through you,
Mr.
Chair, there is for which contractors get or apply for registration and grading within the CIDB. So it may happen in some cases that such contractors that you spoke about, for example, at the Department of Public Works, may be falling outside the classes of work for such registration. For example, if it's a standard public work, labor-only contract, and some of the work that they may be doing in the network, it may not be falling within CIDB grading and retirement. So that's why, in fact, in your question then, without knowing the specifics and those details, I don't think we can respond to that question more concretely and answer the question. Because there may also be those gray areas that may fall outside the CIDB registration system.
So you're going to investigate?
Yes, we will.
They will not be able to change it if you don't provide the specific information on the basis of what he has said. If there's a case in point that you are aware of, then you have to provide the requisite information to find out if it falls within the purview of authority. And then you say that the department has carried that out. So we also have to direct the question directly to the department with the specific information. So at this stage, we have not been specific in regard to that. The question has been framed in a general manner. So this is why we are taking such a long time to get to the bottom of it. So I'd say in regard to that, we have to have the specific and direct them at the department. Can you address the other issues? I'm worried there are people who flew to Cape Town and we also have to take that presentation. Could you answer the questions and we round up on this one so that we can give time to agreement? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. There was also a question on the investigation that has been reported by the Auditor General, which is ongoing within the CIBB. I will try to navigate carefully around this one, Chair, because it is an issue that is ongoing, where the board has taken a decision to say CIBB needs to clean up its act before it cleans up the construction industry. We have seen a couple of rotten apples within our establishment where some of our staff are actually working with contractors outside and registering contractors without the prerequisite documentation. And we have a forensic investigation ongoing that has now been also highlighted by the Auditor General, which we put to their attention to say, you can write a statement on this to say we have an investigation that is ongoing on the registration of contract. And this is something that is ongoing currently. If I may move to the next question, it's about cell phone payment of 154,000, which we need to just clear quickly. Clear quickly.
Thank you, Chairperson. If you allow me, I'll deal with the rest of the questions then that are finance-related. One, I'll deal with the issue of the fruitless expenditure of 151,000 rand. Honourable members, this particular transaction actually happened in 2011. The question was, over what period was this 151,000 rand spent? It was over a weekend, one weekend. What happened in 2011, we understand that a particular staff member, CIDB at that time, was actually taking contracts on behalf of qualifying staff members, cell phone contracts on behalf of qualifying staff members. And what happened in this particular instance, we are informed that on a particular Friday, this one particular staff member was around Hillbrow on a particular Friday evening, and she was then held at gunpoint at Hillbrow on a Friday evening, and the cell phone and wallets were taken and all of that. So when she then called the service provider, who is Nashua, CIDB had taken this contract through a company called Nashua. She then called Nashua to say, this is what has happened and so forth. And Nashua said, no, you can't report this. No, she called MTN. And MTN said, no, we can't blacklist this because it is not in your name. It is in the name of Nashua. And then she apparently did not have details of Nashua. And then on Monday, first thing, when she got to work, she reported this matter to the person at that time that was apparently responsible for cell phones, and they then reported the particular incident at Nashua. It was only on that Monday morning that the cell phone was able to be blacklisted and all of that. And by that time, from the Friday evening until the Monday morning when it was reported, 151,000 had already been spent on this particular cell phone. Now, what then happened was that in 2011, when we were going through trying to clear up and preparing for the audit at the end of 2012-13, I personally picked this up, And how it was reported in 2011, it was reported in, it was put under their thumb. Because the CFO and the CEO then, they decided that they wanted to do an investigation and someone would then have to pay back. Hence, they then reported such transaction as a debtor to say that they will then recover the money once they've finished the investigation. But we discovered that there wasn't any actually particular investigation that was done. I then reported the matter to the audit committee in 2012-13, and it was escalated to the board as well. We started doing investigations, we contacted National, we got the necessary SAPS affidavit, because that particular staff member is still in the employ of the CIDB. We looked at the matter, we looked at all the cost benefits analysis of doing further investigation and legal opinions and all of that, and it was then decided, after looking at all the controls that were there in 2011, what we discovered was that CIDB at that point in time, one, did not even have a cell phone policy. There were no proper controls in place that were actually implemented to make sure that such things would not happen. There were no cappings or limits that were put in on those cell phone contracts. So what I then did at the beginning of 2013, because we picked this up at the end of 2012-13 when I just joined the CIDB, we then introduced the cell phone policy. We also changed the structure from CIDB taking phone contracts on behalf of employee or qualifying employees, but instead we cancelled those and people are now getting allowances instead of CIDB taking contracts on their behalf, so that then the risk shifts to the individual and all that CIDB pays is an allowance at the end of the month to those that qualify. We also presented then a business case to both the risk committee as well as the audit committee, which was then taken forward to the board, and then it was then clear at that point in time that we had to write the transaction off because we were never going to recover this money from anyone based on the reports that were finished and all the affidavits that were then given. The board then approved that on the basis of all the internal controls and all the interventions that we had put in place, and the fact that it was clear that we were not going to recover this money from anyone, we then the board then approved that this particular transaction be written off. Hence, we then wrote it off our debtors in 2013-14, and then we had to disclose it as frivolous expenditure as per the requirement of disclosing such transactions. So that's basically what happened with this particular transaction. And then if I go to the issue of the review of the unannounced financial statements, which is a note that has been included by the Auditor General in their report, it's specifically based on two things. The issue that I covered on why we had to restate the prior year figures.
May I remind you, I would like to also be a sponsor. Also, communicated agreement people have been here. I'm not sure, as I said earlier, why two meetings were set. So I would like you to basically round up.
I must say we have noted all the questions and we are going to sit down and provide nice written answers on each of these questions that we have taken. However, there are planning issues that perhaps we should just touch on before we can be dismissed. I think it's very important to note that the CIDB has got four elements to its operation. The contractors registered services, which registered and as well as grade contractors. And that is the function that is done under our regulating capacity within CIDB. When we talk contractor development, CIDB advises and gives specifics on how contractor development should take place, but itself does not do contractor development and small and medium enterprise development. We speak to client departments and say, ring-fence some funding for contractor development. Also, this is how you should structure development so that there's maximum impact on the small contractors in terms of the work that you do. But we do not have our own budget for and our own program for contractor development. So we are regulator, if I let on to the Deputy Minister's session earlier. On the issue of monitoring, yes, we monitor progress and also alert the contractors which are not doing skills development and contractor development and our clients that are not doing the monitoring properly. We alert them to those situations that are sensitive that need to be covered. But within ourselves, our main thrust hinges on regulation indeed. And as I said, Chair, again, we have noted all of the questions. We will provide a written feedback on all the questions. If there's a further proof, our contact details are available. We can be contacted.
Okay. Besides providing written responses, the work of the entity is such that it's ongoing. So we might invite you back at the earliest opportunity to complete the business here. But I would like to thank the delegation for your time and presentations made. I would now like to give the opportunity to the delegation from AGRIMA. If you could kindly introduce yourselves. By now you look very proud and tired. There's one there in the back, and there's ice tea and ice coffee, which is more expensive.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to express this because I think we did discuss this in it when we had a situation similar to today. We had two presentations, and as a result of the time constraint, we found that the second presenter could not present as a result of the fact that we have enough time. Now, I'm wondering why is this is repeated when we already expressed that we cannot give justice to presentations. If you're coming in here and you have, you know, like what's going to happen now, I think it doesn't give us enough chance to be able to interrogate presentations properly.
Wonderful move. You might have forgotten that earlier on I raised the same point. Our committee plan and the other staff members are engaged with another commitment. So she is the one who normally schedules meetings. I'll find out how this has occurred, but we have previously made it very clear that the ideal situation is that we just have one entity so that we have the requisite time. So the issues that you raised, they are well received. Something that we'll address. Where we can, we will not have two presentations because it does injustice to the presenters. Besides only the members who have to ask and engage with them. So that given the being the situation, I will deal with that situation and make sure that our proceedings go as well as they've gone in the past. AGRIMA, start with an apology. Could you kindly introduce your delegation and then we'll take it from there, madam.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. My name is Adelaide Shwanape. I'm sitting in for our chairperson, Professor Nina. Introducing the team, I have Joe, who's the CEO, who will be taking us through the presentation. And I also have Chapelle, who's going to be taking us through the financial. We have other three members here. Mr. Fana, who's the team leader of the technical team. He had come for other businesses in Cape Town and thought that I can invite him so that he can also show some of the samples that we have certified. And we also have the school that is going to be taking over from Chapelle. So without further ado, I will just give Joe to continue the presentation.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Honorable Chair, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity. In the view of time, I'll discuss some departing slides and I'll try and go through the main points only, but I'll have some time at the end of the presentation to take any questions that may...
Let's do this. I don't want you to compromise your presentation. I would rather you go through your presentation as you have prepared it, and I will ask for the indulgence of members to note the issues that they want. At the next earliest opportunity, we'll engage with you. But it would be unfair to make you compress your presentation, and even if somebody is going to ask questions, then you say that I would have given this information because of time limit. Mm-hmm. So the time that's left now, cheapest watch in the room says it's about 18 minutes to 12. I'm sure we can go until after 12. Make your presentation, and after 12, we'll see where we are, and then I'll take a decision. But at least let's just get what you have to say about your annual report. Members will write down the issue. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I'm
not sure on it, but I think I've checked through my eyes and I've put my
prospective
glasses on. There is nothing from the Auditor General in this annual report.
Let me put members.
Even in the glasses, you can't see.
So,
that seems to be.
Okay, just clear that.
Okay,
there's something under the financial, but continue.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This is a financial statement that is audited by the CSR Internal Audit Department, not Auditor General. The certified certificate for Adima Financials, because Adima is of course under CSIR. And on a yearly basis, it's audited by internal audit.
Okay, just to have the method here, there's a CSIR, and this entity falls under the CSIR, and their report would be interrogated by the Auditor General's office. And in their annual report, they would also cover Agrima, South Africa. So let's just understand that.
If I could just quickly share this, because that's exactly why we'll be bringing early next year an Agrima Amendment Act, Amendment Bill to the Portfolio Committee. Because it's a problem, because Agrima basically reports to the Minister of Public Works. But the funding mechanism is through the Department of
Science
Technology through to CSIR. The matter that correctly, it's not Agrima's fault, it's the way in which the legislation works. So we need to change that legislation so we clean it up. But for the moment, that explains this complexity. But we're not here we're not scoping. Meeting to get an annual report from Agrima, which would include obviously financial and given
Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister Connie, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure for us to present the 2013-14 annual report, and we look at the performance, progress against land targets, governance matters, and the financial statements. As has been reported by the Deputy Minister, we are an agent of the National Department of Public Works, and we look at the issue of technical assessments of innovative non-standard construction buildings. In other words, products for which there are no national standards. We assess them for fitness for purpose, and once they pass the test for fitness for purpose, then we issue them with a certificate of certification stating that they can be used in construction. This goes off an opportunity for the introduction and use of modern and improved innovative construction technologies to the market that we believe contribute towards infrastructure rollout. We have a few examples of samples which we have certificated in the last year, which we'll be able to show you down the table at the back. So if you have some time after the presentation, you can go through those samples and just explain them in a greater detail. We support the National Department's vision to be a world-class public works entity, and we're proud that we, as AGMAR, are an internationally recognized technical assessment agency. As has been mentioned by the Deputy Minister, the draft bill will be brought here before this particular house as soon as possible. I've just stated what's happened in the past financial year. It was approved by the National Cabinet on the 4th of December 2013. The bill recognizes AGMAR as a public entity, as the Deputy Minister just mentioned. Currently, we are not a public entity. That's why our finances cannot be audited, because we are part and parcel of the CSR. Our finances are audited as part and parcel of the CSR, and I'm proud to say that over the past few years, we've had a clean audit as a CSR. Therefore, our finances actually did receive an audit in that respect, given that you're part and parcel of the CSR. Therefore, it's covered under that particular audit. The bill was published in the Government Gazette on the 17th of January, and the public were invited to submit comments to the National Department before the 17th of February. This happened, and the draft bill seeks to give AGMAR South Africa legal status, which we currently do not have. We evaluate the fitness for purpose of non-standardized construction-related products or systems for which no national standard exists for use only in the construction industry. We believe the bill will be a catalyst for the creation of a dynamic and innovative construction industry that positively impacts on job creation or contributes to government infrastructure plans. And various government departments have, in the recent few years, rolled out a lot of projects using innovative products. I'll mention Departments of Human Settlements, which has built a number of housing projects using innovative products. The IDC has built a number of schools, and several other departments are using this particular product. So we're seeing more and more products coming to the fore in terms of innovative non-standard construction products being used to support government funds. Government is also developing a strategy to implement infrastructure rollouts using innovative construction technologies. There's currently initiatives to have majority of government work being done using these modern forms of construction. And the CSR has been requested by the PICC to come up with infrastructure delivery frameworks using innovative construction technology. We believe that this strategy will result in a rollout plan for construction of clinics, schools, housing, student residences using innovative construction technologies across the country. Ladies and gentlemen, this would bring world's best practice to be incorporated and be included into the delivery mechanism. The key goal of this implementation strategy is to ensure that innovative technologies maximize industrialization, mitigate climate change, create jobs, and align to global sustainability objectives. I think these key points are very important, especially the issue regarding mitigating climate change and global sustainability objectives. By this, I mean we're all aware that global warming is no longer just a myth, it's a reality. and we believe that some of the samples we do have at the back, they actually address this particular key sustainability issue, and will lead to having to us having a globally sustainable economy going forward. Hence the need for us to support this particular issue. The National Department is of a strong opinion that this strategy will increase the use of innovative construction products, also result in improved methods of construction, because a lot, as I mentioned, some of them are industrialized systems. So they're erected in a factory or they're assembled in a factory and then put together on site like Lego, you know. So this allows for improved quality of construction to be achieved on site and will contribute towards government developmental goals. I believe that achieving these goals will make a positive difference to the lives of ordinary citizens of our beloved country. Therefore, in a nutshell, we believe that we support government policy. Now, just looking at the legislative landscape, I think the Deputy Minister also touched on this earlier. There are various role players who play in this particular industry. But the key thing is that we all, South Africa being a democracy, the Constitution is the overarching most important act. And the Building Standards Act, Act 103 of 1977, regulates the building industry, the Building Standards Act, Act 103, 1977. And thereunder, this is mandatory and everybody has to comply with the Act. The National Regulator for Compulsory Specification is also mandatory and also lists a list of functional requirements which are covered by the regulation, which are compulsory. So these two acts are the highest level of performance requirements in the construction industry. Now, they're under the Act and under the NRCS, you have the national standards. These are performance requirements. Standards state that if you comply with that particular standard, it will show that you will comply with the Act, you will comply with the law. For example, if you're building a house and you build using a concrete block which is 140 millimeters thick, it will have a performance requirement in compliance with the Act of Parliament, comply with the Building Standards Act. So the performance requirement, so the standard stipulates the minimum performance requirements which you must achieve, and if you achieve those particular minimum performance requirements, it shows compliance in accordance with the Act. And under those, you have four ways in which one can show compliance with the national standard. One is to comply with the Act, which is shown on the right hand side under the deemed to satisfy regulation. You do as is stated in the Act, as I've given the example of using 140 millimeter thick block wall. That means you comply with the Act. The second method, there are two ways. One is a rational assessment or a rational design by a competent person. By a competent person, the Act states that this person must be recognized by his peers as being an expert in that field of competence. For example, a civil engineer can design a bridge to show compliance with the national standards, which is in accordance with the Building Standards Act. Similarly, an electric engineer can design lighting to meet compliance with the Act. And the last method, the third method, or one of the four methods, is the Agama Certificate. The Agama Certificate is a fit for purpose assessment of system performance. In other words, you look at the product and you say that if you use it, it will meet a certain minimum performance requirement. So we do a fit for purpose test to show that the product meets the national standard. So AGMA covers, as the Deputy Minister rightly states, we are one of several regulating authorities. And our sphere of influence is only on those products which we have certificated as being fit for purpose. In other words, products for which there are no national standards, which we assess using scientific methods to assess whether they're fit for purpose to be used in the construction industry. So ladies and gentlemen, this particular slide is very, very important because it shows you what is covered by us and that we play a very small specific role in industry, which is very important though. It's small but very important. Because without the AGMA way, people will not be able to bring new methods of construction into the industry because there will be no way of assessing. So we assess products which are no national standard for use safely in terms of health and safety in the construction industry in South Africa. And our products cover roads and building products as some of the samples are down there on the table at the back of the room. Ladies and Ladies and gentlemen, in terms of the typical product development cycle, one may ask why is Agroma based for the CSR? I think this is because of historical reasons. We are in our 45th year of existence. Agroma was set up in 1969 and was placed at the CSR mainly because of the work that the CSR does, which is related to technology development and research and development. The CSR also assists us in the development of performance criteria and test methods because they have a lot of very clever people, and we need these clever people to assist us to develop that minimum performance requirement strategy. So we use the CSR's research and technology development capacity in developing this new test method and give us the framework to be able to go ahead and actually test the product. So the area in brown or gray, I don't know what color it is the CSR's area they play in the early role in product development. Once the product has been developed, it moves over to Agroma and we test the product. Therefore, our work relates to the assessment of the fitness of purpose based on the test method developed by others or by industry. And once the product has been tested and there are several players in industry, the Bureau of Standards can develop national standards and the product can be used as a standardized product. And there are several examples of products which have gone through our role, through our assessment, which are used nationally as standard products. For example, the plastic water pipes, the plastic bathtubs, the fresh tire roof sheets, etc., etc. There are several products which have come through our assessment, and then they become standardized, and then everybody uses them as standard products. And this is a way of bringing new and improved methods of construction to industry. Ladies and gentlemen, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, in the last financial year, Agroma met its annual targets on projections of outputs. We believe that our work supports governments and triple priority areas of unemployment, poverty reduction, and inequality. And we align to government's growth strategy, and we believe that infrastructure lays a basis for higher growth and job creation. In the past year, when you look at performance outputs against planned targets, we had an annual target of actually receiving 16 applications. An application is not just a one-page document. It's a comprehensive document which comprises of several volumes of technical data which we have to assess to see that it actually meets our area of operation, our mandate. If it's the national standards, we do not accept it as an application. We send the person to the Bureau of Standards. Therefore, there are 16, which may seem modest, but it's commensurate to the number of staff members we have and the size of the South African industry. And we did achieve more than 30 applicants compared to 16. There was a 10% reduction compared to the previous year, from 33 to 30, but we still believe it was way over the average. This average annual target is based on 45 years of output of Agroma, looking at the annual performance over the last 45 years. In terms of evaluation offers, there was also a reduction from 30 to 24, that was a 20% reduction. And offers acceptance, there was an increase of 37.5%, an increase from 24 to 33. And on certificate issues, there was a big decline from 31 to 20, but it's still higher than the targeted. The previous 2012-13 year was the best year in terms of outputs for Agroma in its 45 years of existence. We believe that the impact of a lot of these products, this trendy certificated product, is highly appreciated by the construction industry. Ladies and gentlemen, in terms of governance, in the last financial year, we did table the annual reports in Parliament as was required by the CFMA and Treasury regulations, and the Minister of Public Works approved the Agroma 5-year strategic plan. And the annual performance plan was also delivered as was required in March. And we believe by undertaking technical assessments of innovative systems on behalf of government, Agroma has made a great contribution in the safe introduction to innovative construction technologies in the country with commensurate benefits. We believe that innovative systems have the potential to teach people ways and means to give them an ability to take control over their own future by allowing them to build their own houses. Ladies and gentlemen, the system that we have on the back there, they can be built by unskilled people. You don't need skilled labor to erect some of them. Therefore, people who have no skills or minimal skills can be able to use the system. And therefore, the lead, it will teach people to own the properties. As Honorable Adam said earlier, if communities have a sense of ownership, they will not destroy those assets. And if you make them build it themselves, they'll have a sense of ownership. Therefore, they will not destroy what they have built themselves. The people destroy them because they're built by contractors who come in from Western Cape and Hotel and all the other provinces and leave. So the people have no sense of ownership. But if the local people build this technology, they'll have a sense of ownership and will have a sense of pride and protect them from the vandalization. So we believe that this system allow people to be able to build their own accommodation. In terms of governance matters values, AGMA has support, excellent support systems and business enterprise process systems and very strong linkages with global best practice organization processes and individuals. Due to our physical location within the CSR, which is a big organization, has been going on for quite a while, it's very well governed and strong internal control systems, which is attested by the clean audit. And the board issues addresses issues of corporate governance and shall comply with treasury and national requirements and good fiduciary management within AGMA South Africa. We believe that AGMA is making a contribution to build a better South Africa. In terms of governance, Honorable Chair, ladies and gentlemen, we have 8 board members appointed for a period of 3 years. Current chairman is Mr. Peti Silinga, and we do have annual strategic planning session, and we do have a board technical committee which does approval of certificates. I've got pictures of the 8 board members, and you can see they come from a wide range of organizations. We have academics, we have technocrats, we have people from key industries like the National Home Builders Registration Council, which is a sister regulatory authority, and the Bureau of Standards and the NRCS. This ensures that you're well integrated in terms of governance with the other regulating authorities who oversee the construction industry. And our acting chair is a legal manager with a legal background. In terms of the board organizational structure, we do have a board which does the oversight, and the approval of certificates is not done by us. They're not play and referee. It's done by an independent body which is made up of board members and industry experts. In other words, we do the test, and approval is done at a different level by the technical committee. That ensures that we are not referee and player. In terms of transformation, we must say that we are quite well transformed. We have a 93% staff confidence rate, either female or black. And we have also transformed the technical committee to a large extent. And in terms of black females, we have 33%, black males 53%, white males 5.7%, and white females 7%, making a total of 100%. I've just indicated the board members' remuneration for the last 3 years, and there are only 5 board members who did receive remuneration. The others are from public entities, as I mentioned, and therefore they did not receive any board remuneration. And in the 2011-12, for comparative purposes, I exclude their figure there. It shows a figure of about 1,000. And 12-13, the figure was 52,400. And in the year that I'm reporting on, 2013-14, the figure was 63,500, which you can see there's not very much increase, but it covers the meetings and the technical meetings that the board members do attend. The board remuneration is in accordance with Treasury regulation. We do get figures from Treasury, which guides us to board remuneration. In terms of the remuneration, I've got the annual staff remuneration for the organization there for the staff members. They're listed, as you can see, on the spreadsheet. This is October 2013, which was worked out until the end of the financial year 2014. then hand over to Satello to go through the finances.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, and all honorable members of the Supreme Court Committee. I want to present annual report for 2013-2014. There's a comparison with 2012-2013, which is audited by CSIR and Internal Audit. The grant received for the year 2013-14 was 9 million and 21 million, and out of this 9.1 million, the revenue for the total revenue for the year is 11 million. Out of this 11 million, it's categorized by grant received, which is 9.1 million. Contract income is all the income that we receive on the application that we did, the certificate that we did, and also the offers that we did. On local, it's 1.6 million. Public is 5,000, and the international sector is 237,000, and other income that we receive is 4,250. And the next slide is on expenditure. The employees' remuneration includes bonus for the year 2013-14, which is 5.2 million compared to 5.4 million that was paid in 2012-2013. Depreciation for the year under review is 278,000. Operating expenses is 5 million, which is higher by 560 from 2012-2013, because these operating expenses include overhead, the service that we got from the ADEMA got from share services and executive levy, which includes director services, HR, finance, legal, audit, accounts payable, procurement, treasury, and other services that we get from other services. And the total expenditure for the year is 10.9 million, and for 2013-2014 year, the interest that we received is 162,000, and the surplus for the year is 307,000. And this is categorized by, on the grant income, we have an increase of 5%. On the contract income, which includes all the application fee and the offers that we got, it's increased by 56%, which means we did a lot of work on the local private sector. Finance income decreased by 13%, which is interest based on the money that is in the account. The total income increased by 11%. The expenditure is categorized with employees' remuneration increased by 4%, which includes bonus. Operating expenses increased by 13%, which is the one that I have mentioned before, and depreciation increased by 37%. The total operating expenditure increased by 6%. This is just a graph to show how the report was for the comparison with 2012 and 2014.
Honorable Chair, ladies and gentlemen, I must have to operate under delegation of authority from the Minister of Public Works. And as was mentioned by the Deputy Minister, the funds and the chairperson, the funds are channeled from the department to the CSR, and the funds are ring-fenced within the CSR built environment competence area, the separate competence area. In other words, the funds are used for ADEMA and ADEMA only, and not for any other purpose. And as I mentioned, the CSR received a clean, unqualified audit report. In the last slide, I'll move over to more technical parts where we believe the products contribute to ADEMA South Africa. As I mentioned earlier, the authoritative performance of system performance leads to improvements in performance and allow for the safe introduction of innovative construction technology. and also enhances the export potential of South African manufactured products. Independent research, as I mentioned previously, is shows that this product is actually cost effective. A lot of them cost actually less than conventional. They're efficient in terms of improving performance on human lives. As I mentioned, some of them are cooler during summer months inside and warmer during winter months inside. So they're thermally superior. They're environmentally sustainable and improve on the earth sustainability. They have potential to lower in cost, as Sami will show you the samples after this. I'll try and wrap up so at least we have some time to see the samples. Socially acceptable, improved quality, better skills, job creation, etc. In terms of the certificates, they describe what the system performance does. Now, these are outputs that we do deliver. When you do give a certificate, it's not a one-page, it's a technical document which actually stipulates what the product is. It says what the product does, it assesses what was tested, it lists where that product can be used, it gives conditions where you can use it. You can't just use them carte blanche. And it also states which parts of the National Building Regulations, remember the slide I showed earlier, which is now the deemed to satisfy status within the Building Standards Act, which gives it the legal status, and that's published in the Government Gazette as legal documents. So the certificates are a technical document which stipulates all these particular requirements. In terms of outputs, you look at, we assess products of structural strength and stability, behavior and fire, water penetration, that's the ability of water to go through the product, thermal performance, how is it inside compared to outside, is it more comfortable than outside. Energy requirements, there is legislation, SAMS 204, that was promulgated about 2 years ago, which stipulates minimum energy performance requirements for all new structures. So all new structures have to comply with that act. So we assess those products for energy performance. Durability and maintenance, how long will this product last? Will it break the next day like made in China, or will it last for long? Durability, maintenance requirements, can it be maintained? Can you fix it and keep it at the same level of performance? Likelihood of condensation performing inside. Acoustic performance, we have a typical example of poor acoustics in this particular office room. And applicants, quality management system. Had you used that in approved products here, we would not have had this acoustic performance.
Say, in terms of acoustics, where we are right now, P1, it's like trying to have a prime meeting in a Shabin on a Friday night. I will ensure as far as possible that we conduct our meetings where we normally have them. We have appealed to the people next door, but it seems we are in a marketplace now. My apologies.
In terms of our activities, I'll just jump some of them as I've covered most of them. We look at the fitness for purpose, and we disseminate correct and relevant information. And also we have international links with key organizations in several other countries that ensure that we operate at the same level. In other words, our products can get into their market and their products can get into a market. For example, the Harvey tile, which is manufactured in South Africa, was exported to the United States on the strength of the Agrima South Africa certificate. The fiber reinforcement, that's a new kind of reinforcement manufactured by a number of local manufacturers. It's exported to Germany and several other countries on the strength of the Agrima certificate. So it facilitates the export of South African innovations to the rest of the world. So very important point. Quality management system, which is what is also crucial. Once you assess the product, you have to ensure that the quality is maintained. So we carry out ongoing quality management assessment to ensure that the certificate quality management system is in place and is carried out as is documented in the quality manual. And no certificate is granted until we are satisfied that the quality manual has been prepared correctly and that the person who has that certificate can actually go and manage the quality as stipulated. All quality management systems are developed in accordance with SAMS 901, that's the South African National Standards Quality Management System Guidelines. And it ensures credibility of the certificate, because without quality, then any quality can pass. we also do have a validity review. In other words, once you assess the product, we don't just go walk away. Every year we carry out quality monitoring. In other words, you go where the person has built and check what you have built to see whether it's still building as was stipulated and approved. And every 3 years we do a validity review, which is a more comprehensive assessment of system performance. In terms of quality management, we look at issues like management responsibility, contract review, is purchasing control, is corrective and preventive action. Recording of records is very important. One of the things we have found out is that, ladies and gentlemen, is that industrialized systems tend to be of a higher quality. In other words, if it's manufactured in a factory, the quality happens to be higher than construction on site. Because in a factory, you're working in a controlled environment. And as such, there's greater emphasis on quality, and hence the products are of a higher standard. You find that in South Africa at the moment, most of the A-grade buildings, the high-income office blocks, etc., the high-income residential buildings, most of them are actually built using innovative construction technologies currently, because the people have realized the benefits thereof, and they want these benefits to accrue to the majority of the rest of the public, because if it's good enough for the rich, why not for the rest of the country? In terms of technical outputs, ladies and gentlemen, I've listed our performance for the last 5 years, and I've showed some of this slide before, and I'll just jump to it. It just shows the trend analysis, and I've also indicated it graphically in terms of applications approved and applications received. I'll now move over to the technical outputs, and then I'll describe them here theoretically, but you've got them displayed there physically at the back, so that you can actually touch and see them and actually understand what exactly we do. The first output which I want to describe here is weathercoat, single coat, application weatherproofing painting. This is quite revolutionary. As you're aware, traditionally most paints you have to apply an undercoat, a first coat, and a finishing coat. This particular coat, this particular painting application, it's a single coat application. You apply it once and you don't need to do anything else, and it actually works. We've tested it scientifically, it works. We've tested in the lab, it works. We've tested in the field, it works. And we've seen it being used in industry, and it does work. It's applied using a block brush, just like you apply normal paint, and it's applied in 20 kilogram bags and mixed on site with water. So it comes with a powder, you mix it on site in ground, you stir it, and there you have your mixture, and you apply it once, and it's done. So it saves labor, it saves cost, it saves time, and it results in a good product. The second one is an industrialized single-story building, Excellus building system. And it's a panelized building system, the samples at the back. It comprises of polyurethane, or expanded polystyrene, coal, encapsulated in two layers of magnesium oxide board. Magnesium oxide board is just a board that is used extensively. And we tested this product, and it does work. The next one is also industrialized sandy panel system, but the boards are fiber cement, unlike magnesium oxide boards. Fiber cement is a different board from magnesium oxide. But this particular system is a light steel frame structure. In other words, the structural strength is carried out by the light steel framework, and the boards just provide the cladding to provide the physical barrier between the rooms. And the walls are finished with a skin-proof plaster, skin plaster, and joints are sealed with silicone. We have a waterproofing system for traffic, for flat roofs, which is suitable for pedestrian traffic and light vehicular traffic, including light cars and parks. That's a Rhino lining waterproofing system. So it's both a roofing system and a waterproofing system. Kufor is a very strong system. It's made out of reinforced concrete structure, and consists of two expanded metal lats attached to vertical stiffening and further sections. Then you have another industrialized building system. And then the next one is quite interesting. It's a bridge deck joint. This is a joint between the bridge and the roads. So that joint is subjected to extensive forces. So it has to be quite rigid. And these ones do not, they are used, it's a new method of doing that particular joint, and it's approved by SANRAL for use in our national roads. We have a single seal. The first one is a multi seal. The second one is a single seal, surface mounted bridget joint. Then you also have a thin friction coarse layer. This is a thinner layer of road than the conventional layers. Honorable Chair, I'm sure you and your previous portfolio, you knew that road pavements were pretty thick, but these are much thinner, but they work the same. The performance is as good. So if you're using less material, obviously you're using less money and you're using less materials and you can do it faster. So it saves on time, it saves on the environment, it saves on construction costs as well. This is approved by Sunrun and is being rolled out on our national roads at the moment. We've got samples of the thin asphalt at the back there. Ladies and gentlemen, my next slide shows a cutting system, a software that allows individuals to design interiors of buildings. So it's used by engineers and mechanical engineers to design. So it's different from the standard, so we have to look at it. Then we've got another building system there and another software. We also have thin bituminous emulsifier flake. This is a tack coat. It's a joint between the sub-base and the finishing base. So we also looked at its performance. We have another coating system, another thin paved road system. We have a building system, another industrialized building system, a light frame building system, industrialized building system. So there are lots of them. So I've got 5 minutes, and maybe I can allow Sammy to either do it now or we can do it after the question, so that we can, if there are any questions, we can spend some time to explain the question. The samples at the back. So, Honourable Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister, ladies and gentlemen, Honourable Members, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to present to you, and look forward to future engagement.
Thank you very much to the presenters, members. Comments, questions, please. If we could kindly keep it crisp in the interest of time, so that your colleagues also get the opportunity to pose or make their comments. Tatemuvu, let's start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two short questions. On slide 24, your revenue showed a decrease of 13%. Could you just explain what that is, why that is so? And also, on the bonuses that are paid to employees, are these performance-based? And do you have a system of assessing individual performance and then rewarding that performance accordingly? And thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Adam, followed by Honorable Titone, and Honorable
from Agrima that said, do you have a project that you have started already? Maybe where we can see the process working. And secondly, from slide 4, that your product has been approved by SABS and NRCS regulation. Is it possible for us from the rural place to implement the project from the province? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Could we have responses? Okay, let's have you, Baba Stole. We're in injury time.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I suppose to follow. But you did jump, but there's no problem, Chair. My interest, first of all, is to actually thank the Deputy Minister because of this amendment of the Act, because actually the concern when the entity like ACRIMA is falling under other entity like CSIR, because sometimes it gives us some problems. But what I want to find, Chairperson, because they are certificate, they're supposed to be approved by the independent. What I want to find out, how long does it take before that has been approved and it has been satisfied that this is the true reflection of what is needed or other in the standard of what the ACRIMA is looking for, because sometimes it can take a long time. And what I want to find out, Chairperson, is that because this it's very technological to deal with this thing of ACRIMA. I want to find out the life cycle of their innovative what do you call it, innovative products. That's what I want. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ACRIMA. Your time for a rejoin the good folks.
Thank you, Chair. In answering the first question with regards to the decrease of the revenue, as we have seen that I think we rely on the clients and also with regards to the applications, because the applicants, what they will do is that they will have to pay a fee with regards to they pay to ACRIMA with regards to taking out all the tests. So it is the number of the applications that we had received, and we find that the tests that had to be undertaken, maybe the costs are also less as well. So that's why there will be that increase as well. And also the interest that has gone down as well.
Well, just need to add on. The financing income that is referring to is the interest. We normally got an interest based on the money that is on the account by that time at the end of the financial year. Probably the increase was made because the decrease was made because on 2012-2013. There was a lot of money in the account, and in 2012-2013, by the time the financial year ends, when they calculate the total interest for the year, it was less. That's why there is a decrease.
The performance
bonus is based on the performance of CSIR as a whole. They decide on how they give the bonuses, but also on the unit as well, how the unit performs, because the agreement falls under building environment unit. On big surplus on 2013-2014, it was based on the number of reasons, because the grant amount has been increased to 9.1 million from 8.6, and also there was a lot of private application that we have received on this current financial year, and also the total revenue increased in the current financial year. That's why there is a big surplus. Thank you.
Honourable Member, the question regarding where APGA paid friction paving, can we use this one from Honourable Adams? SANRAL
everyone uses it on their roads. I'm not particularly certain which particular road has used it on, but I know that they're rolling it out across the country. If you notice, when you drive on the national highways, the paving they're putting in now is very thin. It's not the very thick layers we used to see when we were much younger. It's a very thin layer. This is one of those particular projects in San Jose. And I can say with confidence that they're rolling them out across the country. So yes, that is where they can be used. Do you have projects where we can go to? Yes, we do have projects where we can go to. We do have a showcase here in Western Cape, in the Kwenye, which was built about 8 years ago or so by NHGRC, under the ambit of NHGRC, Social Housing Federation, and several after bank and several other players in the industry. We showcase innovative construction technology here. So that showcase, that show village is here in Power, in the Kwenye, in the Drakenstein municipality. We can, that's a project where you can go to in the Western Cape. In Gauteng, we do have the Eric Molobi Innovation Hub, which is in Choshengove, just north of Pretoria. We can also show you when you do carry out your outreach programs. We would like to, we'll engage with the committee secretary and try and arrange something during the outreach program. So you can actually go and see this building, touch them, talk to the people who live in them, and ask them how people, you know, appreciate the whether, how do these approvals work in accordance with the NRCS, and how do they show compliance with the NRCS and other levels of approval? As I indicated in this particular slide, the levels of performance, the Constitution is overarching acts. Under the Constitution is the Building Standards Act. Under the Building Standards Act is the South African National Standards Act. Under that is the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification. Under that is AGRIMA, Assessment of Fitness of Purpose. And therefore all these things cascade up from the Constitution, and all of them cascade up from the Building Standards Act 103 of 1977. Ask yourself, fitness for purpose of products for which there are no national standards. If the national standards itself goes to the Bureau of Standards. So that is where the role we play. Honorable Sitole, in injury time, how long does it take for an approval to be granted? This question arises every time. Like, the question is, how long is a piece of string? It takes as long as it takes to assess the product. And we have mechanized or improved our methods of assessment by introducing faster, quicker, better methods of assessment, whereby we still carry out due diligence, but we do them faster. It takes 6 months to 1 year or longer. The reason it takes 6 months is because certain tests take so long. If you're building a concrete structure, you have to build it. You have to allow 28 days for it to cure before you test it. And that's a fact of life. You can't change that. And secondly, if you are going to test it for durability, you have to put it in the durability machine for a period of 3 months or 4 months, for a minimum period of 120 some number of days, for it to be able to simulate the life cycle of about 40, 50 years, because that's the life cycle of a normal building. So we assess them for durability for that period of time. And so I've answered the next question, is what's the life cycle of products 40, 50 years or longer? And honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, this product actually works. And when you do carry out the oversight visits, you will speak to the people who are actually living in those houses, and they will attest by themselves as to whether they're satisfied or dissatisfied with the product. I thank you for the question.
Thank you very much. Comments and questions and the answers given. The nature of the work and function of AGRIMA is such that our interaction will be on an ongoing basis. So I'm sure that you haven't told us everything that you could have wished to possibly tell us, nor have members asked all the questions that they could have. But I'm sure that there will be another opportunity for further engagement. I would like to thank everyone for their time, patience, and to the delegation from AGRIMA, thanks for the patience that you have exercised. Thank you very much, everyone. Meeting is adjourned.
enough, you could kindly show us the products at the back there to spread that opportunity. As members go to their lunches and what have you, we'll have a look at what you have to offer.